You read the book, you pass the certification, but your cloud is still a mess. Today, we are leaving the classroom and we are entering the Phoenix War Room. We have Olsa from Azure Cloud Academy to teach us why Phoenix implementation normally takes 3 times longer than you plan. You will learn how to stop running in cost alerts and the exact moment you should and when you should not automate a fix. If you are tired of building dashboards and alerts that nobody looks at, listen, we are going to start right off the bat with the question. So for you, Olsa, what is the biggest gap between the FinOps theory and what really happens in production?
Yes, actually FinOps, it's a framework. It's a lot of practice and cultural practice. It ensures to maximize the business value of using the cloud technology. And it mainly has some principles, like 6 principles. And one of the principles, I see a gap, important gap between the theory and the real production world, is the business value, how the business value drives the technology decisions. And here there are issues on the knowledge spread, what I saw in different contexts of the implementation of the technology, is issue on the knowledge spread for the business value when implementing something. In agile team, we implement incremental digital product, and team does not have always the idea on the business value of the feature they are implementing. Generally, this input comes from the product owner or the product team. And there is generally a ratio between the business value and the risk of putting this feature in production. Generally, this ratio is not known in advance, let's say. So this one of the things that makes a big gap between the theory and the production.
Yeah, that's a great insight. I also believe that, you know, the product connection to the business value and, you know, making it real happening, it's a very difficult thing to do. And it's a real gap between, you know, the FinOps like theory and what really happens in production. There is a lot, let's say, a long road between this idea and
It's one of the gap. It's one of the gaps that we can highlight between the theory and the real world. But it's, in my point of view, is one of the biggest gap because project team, let's say, they implement a feature, but do they really know the business value of this feature? It's not always the case. Yeah, generally to avoid really implementing things that with low business value is really to have to question and, let's say, continuously asking for this ratio between what's the value versus the risk if I'm upgrading the digital product with this function.
Yeah, that's interesting. And another question regarding like the product side is, you know, for you, what are the aspects of a FinOps implementation that normally takes like 2 times, 3 times longer than the expected time to implement?
Yeah, there is from aspects which take consistently longer than what we expect is the ownership, how we assign ownership and how engineers feel it regarding to what they generally used to do. Engineers generally, they do not feel the cost as an ownership. They feel like we need to deliver something, functionally speaking, working. But they generally do not have this cost ownership because they say, yeah, if it works well and I can deploy it smoothly, so even if it costs twice time what it should cost, so it's not my problem, let's say. It's more financial department problem in big organization generally. This aspect to assign the cost ownership to engineers is one of cultural aspects that implementation should generally lead, and also changing the habits. Yeah, we all humans, so we use to have a comfort zone and we used to do some tasks, and we are quite comfortable to do tasks, engineering, development, testing, etc. But changing some habits to integrate this FinOps culture, taking some time, actually. Mm-hmm. And so this, because this is, it's always a continuous enablement, and it's not just one setup and we do not do other actions after. So we continuously need to do actions and to enable them.
Yeah, definitely. Like it's a continuous implementation movement, and you don't need to, you know, it's not a one-time thing, definitely. And, you know, moving on to one of the things that is mostly common in finance, which is the anomaly. So we have talked about an engineering side, and we, especially I come from the engineering side on the observability, we have a lot of anomalies, especially for, you know, something going down and for availability side, right? But FinOps also introduces the concept of anomalies for the cost, right? So, you know, talking about the alert fatigue is, you know, how do you balance the sensitivity and being accurate in the alerts with the alert fatigue that causes the anomaly detection?
Yes, one of the root causes for the anomalies is issue on provisioning. In different contexts, we don't have always automatic provisioning templates, or some parts are still done manually. And error is a human, we say, to, for example, do a retention log duration, or having a mistake instead of putting 90 days, for example, putting more, I don't know, adding zero in some duration, which mm-hmm. can happen. If you do provisioning manually, we can also see the auto-scaling issue sometimes when working in strategy, in a cluster provisioning, for example, if the strategy is not defined and when should it scale. So this is also another issue that can happen. It can, for example, scale in a test environment, and we should not have this case. Test environment is only done for typically continuous integration. Also, another issue which is quite common is the fact of not deleting properly the orphans resources, or the resources are not used anymore, but they were not deleted correctly. And most of anomalies detected, generally 80%, like more than 80%, are a configuration issue. This is to recap the three common root causes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's definitely like three of the typical enemies of any FinOps and any engineering in the practice. And, you know, regarding these alerts, so they normally like happen frequently. So there is the issue of the sensitivity. So how do you adjust the sensitivity for this anomaly detection?
Really, how to make, we ask ourselves when you're doing alert and dashboards, how to make a balance and do not spam, let's say, alerting people for something not pertinent. So generally, we should have a method, organized method, to start with the basic things and then refine, make something basic, for example, a monthly alert, and then refine, do daily, hourly, or per service or pertinent, depending on what things you want to show, but better refine the alerts. Also, avoid the false positive. For example, we can have an alert for the day of a promotion day, and we made an alert, but it's quite positive. So generally, to avoid that, we should configure the alert to have some absolute threshold plus a percentage. Meaning if we use for a period to have double traffic for this scope. And so in this case, we should configure the alert to have this absolute threshold plus 10% from, if it increases with a percentage that we define, that should really be the alert threshold. And also that's quite what I said, avoid making alerts during a period we expect to have something different. For example, the deployment phase, we we expect to have downgraded, for example, CPU because something is we're trying to upscale. So we generally avoid to trigger alerts during the deployment phase because resources are it's not relevant. And yeah, that's generally the things to see. We say generally not seen alert is more dangerous than a not defined one. Because also with the automatic, some mechanism of cloud, even in Azure, some alerts trigger some actions actually. And if they are not relevant, then also actions triggered could lead to big issue.
Definitely, definitely. If you are not, you know, 100 metrics, it's definitely a problem. And you know, to work on the anomalies and to figure that, you know, what are the fastest remediation like wins that people mm-hmm. or the teams can implement?
Yeah. So definitely the fastest remediation is the automatic shutdown for the non-production instances. Mm-hmm. So we know these VMs are using only for QA activity or some performance tests. The rule is to do the automatic shutdown on the weekend and do define office hours rules. This helps to save from 20% to 40% from the cost. Yeah. Just, and it's quite, it's the fastest remediation.
Definitely.
Simple.
Yeah.
Very
it's simple, and you can save a lot if you can afford to, you know, have like 24/7 availability requirements and all of that. Then I think it's like I would want. And you know, talking about, we just talked about what we should do, then what we shouldn't do, like what we shouldn't do not automate the remediation.
Yeah, if for example we don't know the context, it's doing automation without context. We don't know what's the business case for this client. And we are trying to do automation for delivery process, for example, or let's say, yeah, trying to build a new metric, but we don't know actually the context, all the business case. In this case, yet it will lead to inefficiency.
Yeah. That's totally true. And I think like it's an inefficiency that you can totally avoid with a simple, you know, with that simple consideration, right?
Yes, it doesn't make sense actually to do this automation. Imagine we have a remediation on config rules or a user permission set to remediate something automatically without knowing what's the consequence of that. Mm-hmm. So it will lead to, sometimes to correct it, it takes more time than to set it up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You don't want to spend more time fixing automations that the time mm-hmm. that is going to save you. You can apply that on everything. And, you know, talking about the problems with automations and the trust, is like, how do you build trust for the engineering teams and the people for the automated remediation to trust? So like, how do you build that trust for automated remediation?
Yeah, generally the first thing is really to put the action to the service owner and not to someone, I mean, in the finance or CFO. So each action to the specific service owner. So this will give the ownership to the people. And generally, we also need to add an automation on the rollback in remediation, always thinking that remediation can lead to failure because there is a big drift, for example, between two deployments, or I don't know what can be the issue, depending on the context. So here we need also to always think about an automation of the rollback in case the remediation doesn't work, and also to show always the saving evidence between the state before the remediation and after. And here we can build the trust.
Yeah, that's a good advice. I think that, you know, building trust and also with you know, having good policies and, you know, explaining it as well to the engineering teams, and they being able to understand it and to see the value of that and seeing the process, because sometimes like you have an automation and you don't get it and like what this is doing, and you know, if you explain it, what's the process, what's the logic behind, and they will probably get some buy-in to that implementation, right? When you realize that it's saving you work time rather than, you know, giving you more, then you automatically buy it in. And, you know, talking about the FinOps practice and, you know, building trust and all of that. So in your perspective, like, what is one thing that everyone or most of people consider in FinOps that do you think is like a waste of time or something that is not very, very efficient in the time space?
Yeah, what I see commonly happening is in the dashboard and observability, we have too many metrics and doesn't help to have consistent decision. So in many metrics, like error rates for this API, CPU usage, a lot of metrics shown with a lot of data without what's to do next, actually. And there is no ownership mapped, because generally, if we deploy resources and there is no tag for the owner, so we don't know who did what. So do not have this ownership mapping also is a big mistake. Yeah, the fact of not having the context, there is something shown in the cost. We know that this deployment, for example, upgrade this cost, but we don't know for which context, for which client, in case we have a multi-tenant, and why, what was the feature introduced this cost gap.
Yeah, that's also true. Like, I think also that, you know, metrics need to be with context as well. Like, they need to mean something, and you can get the insights and, you know, like tons of metrics. Like, for example, if you check like Google Analytics, you have like thousands and thousands of values and metrics that, to be honest, if you're like there, you're like, you don't understand anything unless...
What of these metrics? If there is no do next, what to do next information. So actually you can see how many good apps, but you don't know the decision to do if we have some spike, some lot of data, but no quick decision, next plan to understand in this.
Definitely. And, you know, talking about, you know, you gave good advice on this, but if you had someone, you know, starting their FinOps journey today, and you can give them one piece of advice that are listening to us, what would it be?
Good question. Yes, generally, someone who trying to understand and practice FinOps, he always need to keep in mind it's a practice. It's not a tool. It's not a set of tools. So the point here is to continuously practice this enablement and being aware of the cost consequence on what we are developing, and not just I'm good in this tool, in that and that tool. It's not a set of tools. It's a practice. This is the main point to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to keep in mind. You need to be, you know, aware of the practice. You need to implement it, but yeah, you know, need to think about, you know, dominating the whole thing and the whole stuff. It's a practice, and you need to, you know, it's an ongoing thing.
If you are liking this episode, don't forget to check this automation special episode podcast with Ernesto and Dustin, so you can know more about how to automate your anomalies.
And I think with that, we can finish today's episode. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you, Victor.